This Church Life Today podcast is a production of Redeemer Radio and the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame, and is brought to you in part by Notre Dame FCU and our listeners.
Welcome to Church Life Today, a production of the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame. I'm your host, Leonard DiLorenzo. What is the meaning of time? I don't mean that as an abstract philosophical question, but rather as an utterly practical one. How we measure time tells us a great deal of what we think life is all about, on the grand scale and every day. Our guest today has developed a resource for helping us to reclaim time as sacred, that is to say, as liturgical. Brandon McGinley writes about faith, culture, and politics from his hometown in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He works as editor of EWTN Publishing Incorporated, a book publishing collaboration between the Global Catholic Media Network and Sophia Institute Press. He has developed a weekly newsletter called These 7 Days. And today, he'll share with us some of the insights from this newsletter and what it offers to us in living the Catholic faith. Brandon McGinley, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Brandon, in early of 2019, you launched this weekly newsletter you call These 7 Days. Tell us a little bit about the newsletter and how you were inspired to create it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been thinking about doing some kind of a weekly newsletter for some time, but didn't want to just repeat what was, you know,
out there otherwise.
What other folks are doing. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And so the thought that came to mind was, what would be something that I would find valuable on a weekly basis? And I thought about that for a while and didn't really come to any conclusions. And then kind of one of those moments when everything seems becomes clear, I realized that, you know, what's something that frustrates me about trying to kind of grow in living the faith on a, you know, weekly basis, truly weekly basis, mm-hmm. is trying to keep up with the liturgical calendar,
yeah.
showing up to Mass and hearing the readings while you're trying to wrangle the children and maybe not even hearing the readings at all.
Yes, yes.
And then during the week, you'll realize the day before that it's some interesting feast day that you could do something to commemorate, whether it's have a special dinner with family, or there's some kind of novena and you find out 2 days before instead of 9 days before,
right.
things like that. And so the idea then was I could create the kind of thing that I would find valuable, and that presumably, if it's something I would find valuable, other people might find it valuable too. And so the idea was just to give people a weekly digest of the upcoming week in liturgy, from things like Mass readings in both forms of the Latin Rite,
mm-hmm.
and then the notable feasts for the upcoming week. Sometimes also trying to plumb the tradition for some things that may be a little bit more obscure, things like, you know, Ember Days, Rogation Days, things that aren't really in force, at least in the kind of the ordinary form 1969 calendar,
mm-hmm.
But that people might commemorate in some way or at least know something about. I think the idea of kind of rediscovering our patrimony is a big one these days.
Yeah, that notion of rediscovering perhaps what we've lost, it seems like the awareness of some of these things that you've just mentioned, like Ember Days and Rogation Days, they're just not on the minds of what you'd say, your everyday Catholic. We're not
right.
sort of tuned into this rhythm. So why do you see that as important to try to rekindle this awareness and this kind of movement within the liturgical cycle?
I think you used a word there that really hits it, which is rhythm, that the liturgical calendar gives a rhythm to the week and to the year that is distinct from the kind of the civil secular rhythm to the year.
Yeah.
For those either in school or with kids in school, you know, the academic calendar begins a rhythm to the year. And there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with that. You know, there's the 5 days of the week and the 2 day weekend that gives a rhythm to the week.
Mm-hmm.
But in liturgical life there is a different rhythm. There's the rhythm of Friday to Sunday as a kind of little triduum every week. There's the rhythm of like the Ember Days that mark each season with prayer and fasting. And so these can both work in coordination with the other, you know, whether it's kind of the secular, even the geological rhythm of the year, there's the seasonal rhythm right there, but that they kind of take it and sacralize it to remind us that all of these things are ultimately part of creation. All of these things are ultimately part of the drama of salvation. And so bringing that into everyday life, making that apparent in everyday life instead mm-hmm. of just something that you remember, say, at the Triduum every year, or something that you maybe remember at Advent. I think that's something that people really find valuable. It allows them to bring the sacred, to bring the kind of deeper reality of the supernatural world that is all around us, the reality of grace, and bring that into everyday life.
Yeah, that time itself becomes marked by the sacred, and therefore time becomes sacred rather than just always more of the same. I don't know if you feel this way, but I'm like regularly surprised about the kind of things we as a society, especially in the United States, have dedicated entire days to in recent decades, right? So I actually did a little research on this to see what some of these days were. I just picked like liturgical feasts that I knew and then looked up the other way in which we could celebrate that day. So here I'm going to give you a little list. So February 2nd, which liturgically is Candlemas, is mm-hmm. National Tater Tot Day. So you have options there. June 24th, uh-huh. Which is the Nativity of John the Baptist, is World uh-huh. UFO Day. So they're coming for you. August 15th, the Solemnity of the Assumption. That's National Lemon uh-huh. Meringue Pie Day. I think we should combine those. I think that makes a really fantastic feast, right?
Yeah.
November 1st, Solemnity of All Saints, is actually the Solemnity of All Teeth because it's National Brush Your Teeth Day. So, I mean, what's going on here? Are we just bored with time? Are we trying to find ways to be unbored by time? What do you think we're looking for in all this stuff?
Well, I love the idea. I love the idea of combining a feast with lemon meringue pie day. That's exactly the kind of thing we would do in the past.
Look, I'm a Catholic genius. Oh, well, that's what's going on.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's what we'd always do. That people will say, well, you know, didn't you know that December 25th was actually, you know, Saturnalia or whatever it was, you know, whatever the pagan feast or whatever. It's like, yeah, and we took it and we made it our own. So if we can do that, the pagan feast, surely we can do it to lemon meringue pie day.
That's
and make that part of the celebration.
But
I think that besides the obvious kind of marketing impact of these kind of days, and you know, you get a Twitter hashtag or whatever, mm-hmm. there's a sense that there is something unnatural about every day being the same. There's something unnatural about everything but one day just flowing into the next without any sort of distinction, without any sort of seasonal or you know, quasi-liturgical distinction. And so what we end up doing always, whenever we abandon kind of the church's understanding of these things, when we abandon the church's understanding of liturgy and the liturgical calendar, we end up just creating a new one of our own, whether it's, you know, whether it's Pancake Day or whether it's the weekly cycle of now Thursday, Sunday, and Monday football games from September through January.
Right.
That is itself deeply liturgical. You know when games are going to be, you know what each game is going to look like in its kind of pomp and circumstance.
It's got its own theme song. Its own
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
its own sort of ritual, indeed.
Uh-huh. Yep. And so, you know, reality, even secular reality, will always be liturgical. The question is, which liturgies are we going to focus on?
I love that question there. Which liturgies are we going to focus on? You're listening to Church Life Today on Redeemer Radio. We're talking with Brandon McGinley, editor of EWTN Publishing and creator of the These 7 Days weekly liturgical newsletter. Let's go to that question you just brought up at the end. Which liturgies are we going to observe or participate in? I don't know. There's been, you know, a lot of work and writing on secular liturgies and different ways in which in our communal and even individual lives, we participate in these ways of being and rites. What do some of the more popular secular liturgies, what are those doing to us as people? What is it making of us or asking us to become?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, I always think, and you know, I enjoy fantasy football. I enjoy the NFL season. But I always think about that because it's a Sunday thing mostly, and now they've added other days, which add a rhythm to the week. You know, after there's a reason we have the phrase Monday morning quarterback. You know, Monday is the day of rehashing what happened the day before, and so on.
Uh-huh.
And I think what does it do? I think it desensitizes us to the genuinely sacred reality mm-hmm. of the calendar of the weekly of there's a reason we have a 7 day week. It's not made up. It has to do with Genesis,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I call the newsletter These 7 Days to reflect the fact that each 7 days has its own drama, has its own narrative. And I don't think it's not that a whole bunch of men got into a room and decided we're going to create a secular alternative in order to undermine the true liturgical drama, but So it's not some smoke-filled room where this happens. But again, it's not. I don't think it's also not a mistake. These things build up on or are kind of parasitic on the actual 7-day reality, the actual 7-day cycle of creation and of human life. And so, in as much as a mimic or ape, the true kind of the true sacred 7-day cycle, they then desensitize us to it by replacing it. And so we still live liturgically, and we don't feel that lack quite as acutely as we would if there were no distinctions, as the French tried to do after the French Revolution, creating these 10-day, you know, like metric style cycles, and which just didn't last.
Right.
It just couldn't. It was deeply unnatural. But what we've done instead is replace it with something that reminds us of what can be and should be, and that gives us a kind of weak version of it with which we become satisfied.
Yeah, and there seems something else there too, which is that, you know, rather than the liturgy is something put over us to change us from what we naturally are, in fact, perhaps we're already from our creation ordered to becoming liturgical beings, that if we see in, say, secular realms that what keeps happening is the recreation of liturgical seasons and feasts and ways of marking time, it's corresponding to something that we're looking for already, that we know is in some ways responding to who we are. We want to mark time. We want to be ordered and measured in this way, and we want to be oriented to something. So how do you think, like, simply being aware of the liturgical calendar, which strikes me as one of the great gifts of your newsletter, it's actually the first thing it does is it brings awareness to what's coming and what's happening in the church's life. What do you think simply being aware of the liturgical calendar, what that does to how a person thinks about time or themselves?
I think it brings that reality that has been swept under the rug, or that supernatural reality that we only accept in rare moments, can't physically see, we can't physically sense, but it's brought to us in a tangible way, in a way that can be touched, and on days with, you know, where there's great kind of cultural feast, smelled and tasted in the bonfires of the Nativity of John the Baptist, you know, things like that, that then bring the reality that is a spiritual reality and make it a physical and sensible reality. And so just being aware of that gives us the opportunity to embrace that. It gives us the opportunity to both to, in our own lives and in our own families, to try to bring that kind of sensible reality of the liturgical calendar, of the rhythm and the narrative, the drama of it into our lives. But I would also hope that, you know, whether it's through this newsletter or through, you know, just through other means, that folks could perhaps approach their pastors, approach their parishes about trying to mark these things with a bit more consistency, so that rhythm can also then be brought back into the communal life of the church, and not just picked up by a few people here and there.
And when it's in the communal life of the church, it becomes visible. You actually do things, right? This is a recovery of old traditions, the revival of traditions, processions, mm-hmm. and actual ways in which you mark community life. So what would you envision in terms of, you know, the future of the American parish, what it might look like if it recovered some of these traditions that we have perhaps let fall by the wayside?
So I would just love if there were more opportunities for communal prayer, communal celebration outside just of Mass. Of course, Mass is the high point of the week and the high point of the day in the case of daily Mass. So nothing can replace that. But I imagine the public celebration of Vespers, perhaps on Sunday, perhaps as part of a full day of Sunday liturgy. You can imagine a parish hosting a feast, a genuine actual food feast, mm-hmm. that commemorates a particular saint and commemorates the cultural traditions of whatever kind of culture celebrates that.
Lemon meringue pie day.
That feast especially. Yeah, exactly.
I'm all about this. I'm just going to keep pushing it.
Yeah, it has to be for an American thing. So like Luther Vandross, someone like that. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so on. So I think, having just, you know, whether it's weekly or even just once a month, that there's something going on at the parish that re-sacralizes, that makes the times of day and the times of the week and the times of the month that are not already obviously set aside in the form of Mass, that remind us that all of this is sacred time. And it can be made so in a very particular way again.
Yeah, that makes me think that, you know, the way in which you're talking about these sort of public rituals, devotions, these other ways of community belonging, they're like midway points of devotion that,
yeah,
you know, and it might seem at first like that's just for like the way convicted, like those who are way, way in to the Catholic life, like they're going to do these extraordinary things. But maybe another way of thinking about it is it's really public ritual for those who are barely curious, perhaps. Like you could just come along and do this thing and you don't have to go
exactly
all the
right.
way into the Mass the first time. Like it's something that orders you towards that. Does that sound about right?
I think that's exactly right. I think that the folks who are, you know, like reading several thousand word articles in the history of the Ember Days, that's a starting point, you know, like that's a starting point. And of course, there's an incredible intellectual tradition in the church, and you have tons of people who, as we say, kind of read themselves into the church. They'll pick up the Summa, or they'll pick up some, you know, they'll even pick up Aristotle, you know, and so there's this deep intellectual tradition in the church, but that's only part of what a church, of what the church has been and what any church can be. It has to be more than that. The cannot just be the church of the intellectual. It has to be the church of everybody, and it has been in the past. And so what was the great benefits of all these feasts, you know, if you go back to the Middle Ages or whatever, these were things for everybody, ways for everybody to participate in the life of the church, whether or not they had great learning, whether or not they were even interested in having great learning. And certainly when it comes to the economic and social life of the community, these were breaks, genuine breaks for celebration, to stop toiling in the fields, to realize that the most important rhythm, the most important narrative of time is not the economic. That's important. We don't want to forget about that, but that's not the most important thing. And so much about the way we live now is about prioritizing the economic, prioritizing efficiency. Well, I have to be at my computer on Sunday because I have to be checking my work email. I have to do X, Y, and Z on Sunday or on some holy day of obligation or important solemnity that in the past would have been a break, would have been a time to say, okay, there are important things to be done, but this is more important. And so I think that rediscovering the liturgical calendar is both a way to integrate the life of the church into everyday life, not just for those, like you said, who may be already deeply inclined to such things, but exactly for those who aren't.
Yeah.
There's something to bring them in, something that reminds them that the church, you know, has their best interests at heart in terms of salvation, but also in terms of the temporal reality of the drudgery of life, and that we're there to give you a break. We're there to celebrate these spiritual realities with a true feast, with an actual celebration.
You're listening to Church Life Today and Redeemer Radio. We're talking with Brandon McGinley, editor of EWTN Publishing and creator of the weekly liturgical newsletter, These 7 Days. I mean, it seems to me like you're calling for the recovery of a little poetry to life, that it's not just the monotony and the grind of more of the same all the time. Because we know that the more time we give to the work week, the more time the work week will take till every day becomes the same. And even within a day, that the night is just, you know, it's open to the glowing of screens just as much as the waking hours are. So we even lose like the little liturgy of the day. I was reading, I'm going to say this so I sound like incredibly cultured, but the you know, French Catholic poet Charles Péguy and his poetry on the Holy Innocents. And he was describing in this beautiful verse this daily ritual of doing a small examination of conscience before you go to sleep. But he was giving it to his readers in the imagery of going into a church and dipping your hand into a baptismal font and having the holy waters. It's like a cleansing at the end of the day where you mark yourself yet again into the life of the triune God. And if we could sort of reawaken not just the adult Catholic imagination, but even order like the child's Catholic imagination to that kind of daily rhythm. Like, how does that form people for life, you know? Like each day becomes a little liturgical exercise.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you talk about kids. I think forming them in this And it's not, it's something, yeah, you can form them in by having deep conversations about, but it's mostly you form them in it simply by living it.
Yeah.
And then for them, as they're growing up, their very reality will be formed by that rhythm, by the rhythm of the weekly triduum, by the rhythm of like you said, even within the day, the morning prayer, the Angelus, the examination, or, you know, if you really want to go all out, you know, introducing, this is a dream of mine that we'll never quite get to, but introducing the Liturgy of the Hours into the home, making the home into, in whatever way it is practical, depending on your state in life, something like a little monastery. Mm. Now, I have 4 kids under 6, and so the idea of monastic quiet is really...
the idea of monastic cells, though, right, sounds now. Fantastic. Yeah. Monastic choir. Yeah. So we're going to be eating now, and nobody's going to talk. We're actually, mom's going to be over here reading from scripture to us, and please take it in with your vegetables. No, but
to the extent that it is possible in your state and life, and given the temperaments of your own children, it is possible in some way to form them in such a way that as they grow up, that's what their reality is, and that the reality of the work week becomes the secondary one, the one that is layered on top of the deeper reality, the one that is contingent on the deeper reality as far as it is possible based on, you know, the economic realities around us.
So as a dad, I mean, you said you have 4 kids who are all young. Like what has this isn't like a new awareness for you of liturgical time, but this really embracing this awareness of liturgical time, what can that mean for parents and how you shape your home life? Like, what do you have any sort of, you know, concrete practical ideas for us? Because I imagine people are listening saying, okay, I want to do something. What can I do?
Yeah, you know, it's certainly a work in progress in our house. Mm-hmm. And I work from home, which both has its benefits and its challenges.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that I try to do, at least for myself, and that I'd like to extend to the whole family is I have an alarm on my phone that goes off with little church bell, the church bell alarm. It goes off at noon and at 6 p.m. for the Angelus. And so it's like my own little private Angelus bell. And at noon, I'm often, you know, up in my office, and so I'll just do it myself. But more often than not, at 6 o'clock, I'm, you know, downstairs helping out with dinner or whatever. And I, by no stretch of the imagination, am I consistent at saying, okay, everything stops, we're going to pray the Angelus. But we've done it enough that the kids know it, and that, you know, in that, while it's certainly not to the point where they now are looking at the clock and seeing it's 6 o'clock, that's what I'd like to get to, where, you know, just that's, I think it's a great starting point where it's just every 6 hours. And it's also, as kids are learning to read analog clocks, those are really easy points to remember by just looking at an analog clock. And so I think that's a great starting point, because deeply traditional, but also, you know, not that hard. And it's, you know, it's traditional, while it's never something that's really gone away. We've just forgotten about it.
I mean, this is I'm going to share a little bit of a sort of idyllic image, but you can imagine, you know, these old towns that built up around monasteries where there was a clock tower in the middle, and these bells would go off to mark the periods of prayer throughout the day. And it was for the monks in the monastery, but that sound also permeated the countryside around, so that the rhythm of life of the town around it actually had these signs of the call to prayer that measure the day. And people, you know, would actually understand the time of the day according to the bell. So, you know, that got replaced, you know, in the work week with the whistle of the factory and all kinds of other things. And now, you know, we get all these reminders from all our devices to check this email, to go to this thing. So what I love about what you've said is you're taking the most modern device, your phone, that's with you most, if not all of the time, and repurposing that bell to recover something that we've lost.
Right, right. Yeah, something I like to write and talk about a lot is how, like we talked about earlier, how the church through history, when the church at its most confident was not just kind of turning it in on itself. It was actively going out and co-opting the profane things in the world around it, co-opting pagan feasts, you know, and kind of co-opting aspects of the world that were not specifically Catholic, but then making them so. And so while, you know, we can have a long conversation about what the actual good and the actual, you know, evil of aspects of modern technology, there are things that we can still co-opt, that we can say, okay, this thing can be used for profane use, but we could also use it for sacred use. And, you know, speaking of idyllic, here's an idyllic thought, that, that someday we could, with that kind of sacred confidence, go out and truly, you know, co-opt it all instead of it just you know, a few phones in a few places.
That sounds right. Well, Brandon, as we finish up here, can you let us know where we can find and subscribe to your newsletter, These 7 Days?
Absolutely, yeah. So you can just Google those three words, These 7 Days, or you can go directly to the website, which is Brandon McGee, BrandonMcGee.substack.com.
Substack
is the name of the service.
Substack.
Yeah, I don't know why they call it that.
Yeah.
Substack, Substack. And I don't know what it means, but that's what it's called.
Very good. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for not only this time with us today, but for this incredible resource that you've offered to us for our weekly observance. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for joining us on Church Life today.
This Church Life Today podcast is a production of Redeemer Radio and the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame, and is brought to you in part by Notre Dame FCU and our listeners.